Welcome to Seeking Alpha's Wall Street Breakfast, your daily source of market news and analysis. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Welcome to Alpha Talks, Seeking Alpha's Editor's Roundtable, What Moved Markets This Week, the week ending Friday, March 5th, 2021, the first week in March. What a week it was. The week started off positively enough with a nice rally on Monday and then kind of went into a bit of a tailspin. Thursday was the biggest loss so far. All of this caused by one Jerome Powell and his unwillingness or inability to engage in yield curve control. We sold off pretty dramatically after that became clear on Thursday. This morning, Friday, there was a brief little rally after the non-farm payrolls surprised to the upside, but that then faded. But now at this moment, as we speak, the Dow is back into positive territory. This is at noon on Friday. I suggest that to potentially change again in short order. So let's not get too much ahead of ourselves. But I am curious what my co-panelists have to say about all of this. And let me introduce them now. In no particular order, Brad Olison, the VP of News, Kim Kahn, Senior News Editor, and Stephen Alfer, Managing Editor of Breaking News. I am your host, Nathaniel E. Baker, Senior Editor of Strategic Contributors here at Seeking Alpha. All right, let's kick off with Kim as we normally do to give us the big picture laid out and the view of where things are right now.
Yeah, well, if we start with what just happened today is kind of a little snapshot of how the week's been run. We had the big headline payrolls number, which is more than double expectations today, big jump in private sector employment. And then we had a little head fake, but right after in the stock market, in the bond market, yields really spiked up to recent highs, 10 years above 1.62% briefly before easing back. And that's just more inflation concerns for the bond market, it seems like. And that's what has been hitting stocks through the week. That kind of turning point with Jay Powell's comments when he was talking in the Q&A session, they really pressed him on whether he was going to do Operation Twist Part 3, which is kind of trying to flatten the yield curve essentially by selling short-term bonds and buying longer-term bonds. And, he naturally dodged any kind of direct answer to that question. But it seems like the bond market and their spike afterwards was concerned about his dovishness. I mean, he was pretty much saying the Fed can be very patient for a long time. And the bond market, in fact, was saying, well, we're more concerned with inflation. We're not going to be patient. We're going to push yields up. And they spiked right up and that hit the high value tech stocks. And, Powell's going to be entering a quiet period soon ahead of the March 17th meeting the FOMC has. And I think he'll be welcoming that because he's kind of in this no-win situation where they don't really want to do, a Operation Twist, but he doesn't want to say he's going to be tough on inflation and kind of, hit expectations there and hit growth there. And I just say that all this is happening on a very different political backdrop that can't really be ignored. I don't think Powell has to worry about the stock market that much going down because Biden's simply not going to tweet about it or look at the Dow as, this barometer of his presidency, like Trump did. If anything, the stock market goes down, it could help Biden with his base a bit. And you see it in the non-farm payrolls today. I mean, Trump would have been out tweeting, this is an amazing number. And it was a large number and a great gain in jobs. And, but instead the White House was out today saying, hey, remember, this is just one data point. We're not out of the woods. It's not a big deal because they don't want to, give any more fuel to people saying we don't need $1.9 trillion in stimulus.
Yeah, not to get ahead of ourselves on the discussion here, but I do not understand why the market is holding Powell or anybody is holding Powell responsible for yield curve control at this state of the game. I mean, shouldn't the 10-year be doing exactly, shouldn't bonds be selling off at this stage of the economic cycle? And in many ways, isn't this doing exactly what the Fed wants it to?
100% net. The rise in yields has been quite modest. Yields should go higher as the economy improves, and the economy is improving. It's opening up. Travel and leisure is coming back. Restaurants are coming back. Texas is wide open now. Mississippi, even states like Connecticut, and quietly my state of Pennsylvania, those governors are quickly reopening. So yeah, I would take exception to almost all the kind of the memes now that Jerome Powell and his refusal to do yield curve control or something like that was responsible for the crack up. We had bubbly equity valuations and a number of sectors, EV, you know, being one, even a company that's actually making tons of money like PayPal, just go way too far too fast, and they're cracking a little bit.
Yeah, let's get to Brad on the winners and losers. I forgot to mention one section here that's quietly done quite all right this week is energy. You know, we did have OPEC, the announcement yesterday, which helped. But to your point, Stephen, if energy prices to be higher, you also need demand to be strong. Demand would probably not be strong if the economy were in really bad shape. But anyway, curious about the winners and losers. Brad, take it away.
Yeah, I mean, as we all alluded to, no surprise here, the winners this week were obviously in the energy category, Diamondback Energy, Occidental, Devon Petroleum, partially due to the OPEC staying put on some of its output. But obviously, it had been a gainer for quite some time leading up to this week as this reopening trade, as Steve was pointing out, starts to pick up steam. You know, Norwegian Cruise Line, again, cracking the top performers this week. Obviously, one of the most hard hit names during the pandemic. And as we already alluded to, the yields rising has kind of taken some of the steam out of what Steve calls bubbly valuations in the tech names. You know, Salesforce.com, Twitter, and even Tesla were huge losers this week, along with rate sensitive names and REITs, sort of like American Tower was among the biggest losers. And that's partially attributed to the yields rising, which should be associated with a stronger economy. And I think we touched on this last week when we were discussing whether the yield rise is a bad thing for equities or not. And it always comes down to whether the why associated with that. And as Steve also mentioned, this is kind of healthy, right? The yields now in the 10-year are still below what they were pre-COVID. Goldman joined, you know, I think last week on this program, we mentioned JP Morgan raising their forecast for the 10-year. Goldman raised their forecast for the 10-year this past week up to 1.9%, which still would probably be around where it was pre-COVID. So obviously that some of these yields are taking some, you know, wind out of the sails of some of these growth names. But then if you want to take a look at what the valuations are doing, my favorite metric is just to take a look at the equity risk premium. The equity risk premium is just the spread between the S&P earnings and the 10-year yield. And that, however, right now is now at the lowest level since 2010, though it is still positive. So you still will see a return in equities versus the risk-free rate. But the last time the equity risk premium was negative was way back in 2002. So there's been a lot of wind in the sails in equities for a very, very long time. And I think what notably this discussion is picking up steam and at all different research houses. LPL, I think, recently just discussed how, you know, when we talk about how yields being bad for equities, it really depends. And we touched on this last week, whether it's due to the economic tailwinds or whether it's due to inflationary concerns. And what they found was that usually when yields are picking up in terms of the level, that usually equities aren't that far behind. So taking a look at how earnings have done in the fourth quarter, as we are just wrapping up now, they're tracking up 3.5% as far as the S&P earnings for this past quarter. And the earnings revisions for a lot of the research houses are now forecasting close to 24% growth for earnings in 2021. So it seems to me that the yield play is not as negative for equities as it would be if the economic tailwinds weren't exactly there.
Yeah. I guess the one unique thing is that you had the sell-off in bonds and the sell-off in stocks at the same time.
Certain stocks, right?
You're right. So it was only certain stocks. Yeah. Some stocks have quietly done very well, like the energy sensitive names that we mentioned and the others that you just mentioned. Stephen, what else were you watching in the way of corporate news and other things?
Kind of one big piece of corporate news that kind of went under the radar because of so much else going on was Berkshire Hathaway.
Yeah.
And Warren Buffett with his annual letter over last weekend is very interesting. He's kind of taking a big deal off the table, but they've been buying back stock. So they're still kind of putting money to work. They're putting money to work in their own stock. But it's interesting, the performance in Berkshire Hathaway. To me, it's kind of like an old economy stock. And about the time when Buffett starts getting trashed or when we start ignoring him is about the time when, you know, the hot names are going to start coming down and Berkshire's going to start doing what it normally does, which is outperforming the S&P 500. And Berkshire is actually higher on the week. It's nicely higher year to date. It's way outperforming the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. It's actually outperformed both those indices over the last 6 months and is really close to actually outperforming the S&P over the last year. It's nowhere close to the NASDAQ over the last year, just to show you how far the NASDAQ has gone ahead. So I found that to be a really interesting bit of corporate news and would highly recommend folks go back and look at our story on it and, you know, read Buffett's letter. It's great stuff.
Yeah, he also reiterates his call not to bet against America and American stocks under any circumstances, which he said before. But look, Buffett's been vindicated several times with his picks and some of these newer entrants to the game of investing. I'm not going to mention any names, David Day Trader. Cathie Wood, et cetera, you know, have a bit of a less of a track record. So we'll just have to see how that all turns out. All right, let's move on to the next segment of the show where we discuss our favorite news coverage or other stories, articles that we've edited or read, sometimes even written. Kim, you've been quiet for a while, so let's start with you.
A couple of quick ones. Just going back to yields. This week, Guggenheim's Scott Minard was out with his call saying that he expects the 10-year yield to keep dropping and trough around negative 0.5% sometime early next year. His chart is kind of regression analysis, which he calls the drunken man in the snow chart. It shows that there may be staggering left, right, and center, but the direction is towards home, and that's where yields are going. They're going home, and it's down. And the other one I had was Goldman Sachs is looks set to reap $200 million off of the Texas weather crisis, and it's from its energy trading on paper. Whether it's able to claim that much, even Goldman executives say is iffy, depending on company bankruptcies and such like that. But as Steve mentioned when he pointed out the story, this could be just another iteration of the Goldman Sachs vampire squid that you'll hear on sucking on the face of society. So,
I mean, Minard's call is pretty contrarian. I mean, for yields to drop all the way back down there, I mean, you'd have to have a lot of risk off. And how are you going to get that, especially if the Fed doesn't do anything, is an open question. But he's a smart guy. I don't want to second guess him on that. But we'll see, man. I mean, that is a pretty big call.
Yeah, it's huge, and especially when you consider that, you know, fiscal stimulus is still yet to come. You're kind of betting that the bond market's going to discount the entire recovery for this year. So it's definitely a big contrarian call.
All right, Brad, what about your favorite story?
So I guess just touching on some of the themes of going too far too fast. You know, I don't want to say that they have gone too far too fast, but the market has told us that they may have gone too far too fast. And I think that comes into the electric vehicle story. Mm. One of our editors here, Clark Schultz, has talked about the Tesla halo, this ability for the Tesla's valuation to lift all the boats in the space. And that has now come off entirely. We're talking about Tesla being off close to 20%+ 25% since the February announcement that they were jumping into Bitcoin. I'm not making a connection between the two. But it is just interesting that that pace of decline matched within a couple tenths of a percentage point, the same pace of decline that Tesla shares had during the peak of the COVID fears. So a little bit of the shine has come off that name, which prompted Wedbush to come out and massively defend the space, calling it a massive buying opportunity to be, you know, just pile into electric vehicles wholesale. We've seen a lot of these names take a hit. Fisker, I think even Neo and XPeng and Li Auto. These were all these names that Wedbush said that would probably be great opportunities for people to get involved with. We saw that Lucid Churchill SPAC deal finally get done within the last couple of weeks, which is probably a boon to the space. But obviously, there's some weakness there as these valuations get a little bit out of sorts. But I just found that interesting, just taking a look. I think Tesla's down another 10% today. So definitely a little momentum coming off, people kind of taking a breather, but definitely a space to watch.
Yeah, definitely. Halo also, by the way, is a song by Beyonce. You did not mention any celebrity stuff this week, so I'll throw that in. Stephen, what about you? Favorite stories?
Our editor, Jerry Kronenberg, not long ago, just put up a story about basically the SPAC bubble is fully cracked. The air has really, really come out of it. You have a lot of kind of high profile pre-deal SPACs that were trading at crazy premiums to their prices. Bill Ackman's Pershing Square and Tremas, one of his latest, which is IPOF. I'm not sure what it's called, Social Capital, something or other. They're plunging. Even Liberty Media, which was trading at like a 45% premium post its IPO, it's down to about a 10% premium. So these were SPACs that were trading at above the IPO price, even though they hadn't had it, inked a deal yet, just in kind of anticipation of that today or over the past couple of weeks, and particularly today that the air has come out of that one.
Right, the SPAC daddy, right? SPAC daddy Chamath.
Right.
You know, with his, I think, he sold a couple $100 million worth of Virgin Galactic last
night? He's getting out of Virgin Galactic as fast as he possibly can right now. And of course, that stock's getting destroyed.
Yeah, and I think that's the important point here, right, is that, yes, stocks are selling off a little bit, but which types of stocks are moving? And I think that's kind of where we need to focus our efforts, is on these growth names, maybe these names have gotten a little bit ahead of themselves. And just a final point on the yields is we shouldn't be concerned unless they move very, very quickly. Goldman Sachs had a note out on that just recently, saying that it's not necessarily where yields are, but how fast they get to where they are. Mm-hmm. So if we do have this slowdown in the yields rising, and or if they fall, as Menard said, then we're probably in good shape. But if they continue to rapidly increase, that's when you're going to have more of the air come out of the tires here.
Yeah, and I think the speed of the sell-off was what kind of spooked people a little bit here. I mean, how recently was the yield below 1%, and now it's up to 1.6. So, yeah.
I think the focus is also going to be on the shorter end of the curve now. A lot of strategists are saying that that's when the Fed is really going to be challenged.
Right.
And that starts moving, and it hasn't yet. It's, you know, it's stayed at its depressed levels, even through this run-up in longer rates.
And you mentioned it too earlier, that like with both the bond market and the stock market sell off, that's pretty bad. It's okay if it happens for a few days or even a couple of weeks, but if you get a sustained sell off in the bond market combined with a sustained sell off in the stock market, that would be bad news. And, you know, the Fed would really, really be in a bind at that point.
Yeah. I also wonder, just, you know, as far as some of the sheen coming off of these tech stocks, how big of a concern that is for all of the, you know, stonk people of the world. I mean, if you look at the SPACs, you look at the tech shares, I mean, okay, you can make the point the NASDAQ is still well above where it was a year ago, but still, like, some of the euphoria you feel has maybe gotten shaken out here a little bit this last week and a half or two, or maybe not. I don't know.
It's coin the term called faction trading, where we have these Tesla millionaires. Remember, that was, you know, don't ever go against Tesla millionaires. Then we have the crypto fans, then we have Wall Street bettors, and there's something wrong with them. But it just does seem like we're putting everyone into these factions and these buckets, and they all do well at certain periods of time. You just got to catch that wave.
And right. I think the retail moves on. I mean, overall, I think if you look back, they were all into the bankruptcy stocks, and Hertz was the big one on Robinhood for a long time. And then, you know, they came into other names. So I guess, yeah, I think they'll just find another thing, you know, thing to target.
Some of these Wall Street bets favorites are quietly doing okay this week. Like GameStop is up, and some of the others, like they did okay.
And we didn't even mention the Buzz ETF, which
Well, we already mentioned Dave Portnoy once, right? Oh no, we mentioned
We mentioned him this week. We mentioned him last week. So we we don't need to. We did not mention Kathy Wood. I just dropped her name in there in passing, real quick. But maybe we should leave her alone for now. Yeah, had a, I'm sure she's had a pretty tough week.
You can see our coverage, so look that up on Seeking Alpha. We have a ton of stories out on Kathy Wood and some of her ATS.
Right. Cool. Well, on that note, let's wrap it up for this week. Thank you all for watching and listening, as the case may be. If you are listening to this and want to see our beautiful faces and the other stuff that flashes up on the screen, and you can do so by visiting the website seekingalpha.com/videos. And with that, we thank you again for watching and listening, and look forward to speaking to you again next week.
That concludes today's Wall Street Breakfast. Thank you for listening. For the best investment analysis and news on the web, go to seekingalpha.com. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can sign up for our other podcasts, Behind the Idea, Essay for FAs, Let's Talk ETFs, the Cannabis Investing Podcast, and Marketplace Roundtable on those platforms as well. Have a great day.